Stay tuned for excerpts from the Grassroots News and Media Conference held in Austin, Texas, with Fuerza Unida, Lorenzo Gamboa Irvin, the Zapatistas, and then a commentary from Joanne Capilaro. My name is Mike Thornton, and welcome to Full Logic Reverse. We're here at the Grassroots News and Media Conference in Austin, Texas, speaking now with representatives of Fuerza Unida regarding a proposed boycott of Levi Strauss & Company.
My name is Petra Mata, and I'm one of the representatives of Fuerza Unida in San Antonio, Texas. Represented 1,150 people that were laid off in 1990, one of the Levi's plants, you know, and moving to Costa Rica. Their product. Since then, we declare a boycott against Levi's because the benefits they pay at that time, they were unfair. So we were in a struggle for 8 years, and we continue in struggle fighting Levi's, fighting this big corporation because they abuse their workers after we give so many years of work for them, and then just throw to the side and leave, you know, leave to another country, to their work countries, to abuse our brothers and sisters, and when they pay minimum, very minimum wage. So from 1995 to 1990, Levi's were already shut down 26 plants. From 1990 to 1998, already announced last November, 1997, they were going to close 11 plants. In 8 months, you know, they were going to leave again 6,375 workers, you know, out of jobs. And they announced it, they admitted it, they're going to go to China, you know, to pay very salaries. And so we have a campaign. So we recommend people to don't buy Levi's, not because we want to hurt their pockets. We want to present the really image the Levi's have. You know, they abuse their workers. They make it work in so many hours. And now they didn't even pay them the minimum wage.
Levi's also makes other brand names other than just quote-unquote Levi's, right?
Yeah, well, they make 501s. They make Dockers. They used to make Britannia, you know, but mostly what they make rich, you know, the Dockers. The Dockers sell, like, you know, pan caliente, like Mexican words to say. You know, but really, really, we wanted to people aware, you know, what these big corporations doing to their workers. They're not protected, you know. We understand that right now is a lot of layoffs, not only Levi's, but we're trying to keep an eye on those companies. What they, like I said before, they're abusing their workers, and then they just throw it to the side, you know, believe it that they're not good anymore. Because like in our case, you know, we are media age, you know, like it's up. So we feel that that's what they're doing, you know, like not to pay good benefits, like retirement, you know, severance pay. And that's all the demands that we have, you know, in all these years.
So in addition to trying to exploit workers in low-wage countries by moving jobs out of the country, they're also getting rid of older workers.
Yes, and not only that, you know, when they lay off us, you know, they're starting getting a new young people, you know, and a lot of the contracts only, you know, for a year. And I mean, we actually know that they don't pay, you know, benefits because they just finished the contracts and then they close and move to another country or to another city.
In addition to people boycotting Levi's, not buying their products, are there any other ways that people who are listening, if they want to support your struggle, how could they go about doing that?
We have a lot of support in other cities, like, for example, in San Francisco. It's the headquarters. You know, we've been going over there. We have a lot of union support, Fuerza Unida. And we recommend, you know, to send a letter. We have some cards, you know, that we want people to sign and send it to the Bob Haas, the CIO in San Francisco. And support the workers, you know, because who tell you the Levi's that you wear, the penny jeans that you wear, I mean, it's not making for one of the ladies of Fuerza Unida in San Antonio, Texas. Thank you for, you know, to interview us, and hopefully people can support Fuerza Unida.
We're at the Grassroots News and Media Conference, and we're with Lorenzo Gamboa Irvin. Mr. Irvin, thank you for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure.
I wanted to talk with you, and we had hoped to get you on the show. I really feel fortunate to have met you here today. Can you talk about your trip to Australia and what's happening with the Hansen party over there? I mean, this woman's really out of hand from what I gather.
She's out of hand, but she's also building a lot of base of support for her fascist movement in Australia now. As I heard, someone called me, in fact, just yesterday, saying that she's now 31 percentage points in terms of the opinion polls, 31 percentage points and rising, in a country where it doesn't require a third of the elected to get elected as prime minister, you know. So, I mean, I had made a prediction that she had a very good chance of getting elected prime minister because she's using racism and racial antipathy among the white population at a time when there's an economic crisis and they're looking for scapegoats. So she has a chance to in fact move up and become prime minister. That's one of the things I realized that when I was there before, that she had a tremendous amount of influence. Also that the rich folks, the ruling class and the media were making her career, were pushing her forward. And so when I came to Australia in July of last year to meet with the leaders of the Aboriginal movement and the anti-racist movement there, to talk about an international boycott against the Sydney Olympic Games of 2000. She had me arrested, literally. She said that the guy coming, he's going to stir up racial violence among the indigenous or Aboriginal, and he's anti-white, he's a terrorist, this, that, he's just going to lurid charges. And they were picked up on by the local media, the statewide media for Queensland State. And the Attorney General and then the Prime Minister actually started putting a plan into motion to have me arrested and deported out of the country. And shortly thereafter, I was arrested and I was held for deportation. But we filed a lawsuit and we went all the way up to the equivalent of the Australian Supreme Court, which is the High Court of Australia. And ruled, in fact, in our favor, saying that the Prime Minister does not have absolute state power vested in his person. He still has to give some sort of due process procedure, what they call natural justice, to a person charged with offenses as well as persons who are coming into the country. They have before they can deport them, they have to go through some sort of legal proceeding that they didn't do in my case, you know. So I was ordered released, and I was ultimately able to complete most of my tour, you know, but I had to leave the country by a certain date.
We're talking with Lorenzo Gamboa Irvin here at the Grassroots News and Media Conference in Austin, Texas. My name is Mike Thornton. Mr. Irvin, let me ask you, you're also very, very much involved in the micropower radio movement here in the United States and Black Liberation Radio. We are on the heels of federal judge Claudia Wilkin now completely reversing herself in the Dunifer case. Can you talk a little bit about micropower, Black Liberation Radio, and where this is all heading in your opinion?
Well, first of all, you know, Black Liberation Radio and myself personally have always been in the ranks of those who felt that direct action to really pressure the government was necessary. We felt that the lawsuit was extremely important, but we also felt that that was in the government's hands, and in point of fact, what happened could have easily happened. We also felt that what we need to be fighting for is a moratorium on these stations, but also fighting for our rights to broadcast. We're not going to get that any other way other than us coming together as a political force to pressure the government to give us that. You know, it simply is not going to happen on its own. And so we have felt all along, myself personally, have been pushing for the beginning of the early days of it, that we need to have a direct action movement and not just have this reliance on the court system and court cases, even though as important as they were. We think that, of course, that the Dunford case certainly opened an avenue up for us to reach large numbers of people. It brought a lot of people on air and so forth. But all of that can be reversed if we're not organized now to defend our rights. And we've got to be willing to do that with protests at the FCC offices, going before Congress, or whatever we have to do to pressure the government to give the right that we're entitled to. They're not giving us anything at all, really. We're demanding it and taking it. And that is the airwaves back from corporate interests and from the government. To do that is not going to be easy. It's not going to be easy, but it can be done. It can be done. I'm totally convinced of that. So this conference today becomes even more important in its significance, even more important in its significance, because what I'm going to call for is a mass campaign against the FCC and the National Association of Broadcasters, and put tremendous pressure on them so that we can win our rights to broadcast.
When you talk about a mass campaign against the FCC and the NAB, what do you mean by that?
But I mean, we should actually demonstrate at FCC headquarters. I'm convinced that we should demonstrate and have civil protests, civil rights protests, civil disobedience, and what have you at their offices. We should disrupt their ability to conduct these raids and these harassing actions of us. We should take the offensive. I'm convinced of that. I don't think we should sit around and wait on anything. I think that we are going to have to also have an educational campaign where we're going to have to enlist all of our listeners, people who've been listening to us. We have to enlist those, educate those folks, and mobilize them to come with us to a big demonstration in Washington, D.C., which is what I'm calling for, a big demonstration in Washington, D.C. I'm also calling for a tribunal in Washington, D.C., so that people will understand that there really is no free speech in this country, that the government controls and allows certain folks to speak while they take others and suppress them. And we need to let all the people in this country know that. So from my standpoint, it's a political fight, more so than it was a legal fight anyway. And so what we're saying is that we're going to gum up the works of the FCC, come up the works of the federal government, and enlist all we can, enlist all those who believe in freedom of speech, all those who believe in democratic rights, all of those who believe in rights generally for common people. We're going to enlist them into this fight, and we want thousands of people to go to Washington, D.C., and go to the FCC headquarters and protest right there, and the NAB headquarters is right by, and we want to put pressure on them like that. And this issue public, more so than it has been. I think it's a good issue, but it has not been made public except among those who already are doing radio. And that's fine, but we need to go beyond. We need to go beyond to the average person who may not know what the issues are. We need to recruit those people, let them know that free speech is in peril in this country, and here's a perfect example of it. And when we do that, I think we'll then be able to enlist thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of people in this campaign, and I think we'll win what we want.
Lorenzo Camboa-Irvin, thank you for joining us on the program.
Thank you.
Stay tuned to KVMR's News and Views. And here we are in front of the Mexican consulate in Austin, Texas. We're with Marguerite, who is with the Zapatista Front, and she's going to let us know what's happening currently in Chiapas and why people are out here protesting. Margarita, thank you for joining us on KVMR-FM. Perhaps Margarita can tell us what's happening currently in Chiapas. We've heard that fighting has increased.
Sí, lo que está pasando ahorita en Chiapas es una estrategia del gobierno mexicano con su ejército de police, ¿no?, para desmantelar los municipios autónomos que tienen las bases de apoyo zapatista.
What the Mexican government is doing right now in Mexico is that they're making a strategy in order to annihilate them within a matter of months. The last few massacres have been an escalating way of violence, and after each one, it gets quiet, and then after they do another one. It's just sort of a way of low-intensity war.
Lo que pretenden hacer con este desmantelamiento de los municipios autónomos es acabar con la resistencia de las comunidades zapatistas, porque al atacar militarmente lo que hacen es dejarlos desamparados, aislados, hacer todo un cerco de hambre y de miseria con las comunidades, ¿no?
What they want to stop is the Zapatista resistance. They want to leave them isolated, want to leave them starved, just so they can have a better way of attacking the communities.
Part of the thing that we're beginning to find out here, at least some people in the United States, is that there is millions of dollars in United States military installed anti-drug aid that is going to the Mexican military that's being used to suppress the Zapatista movement. Is that correct?
No solamente millones de dólares están mandando, sino también están haciendo entrenamiento de contrainsurgencia. Muchos de los armamentos que se han encontrado, de los restos de armamentos, de balas, ¿no? Y son de procedencia de Estados Unidos, norteamericana. Y el material bélico, los camiones, los tanques, también sabemos fehacientemente de que son de procedencia norteamericana.
Part of the strategy also that they are not in just investing tax dollars for the military down there. They are not just sending arms or helping, sending U.S. military aid, but they are also training them. They're making a counterinsurgency in order to annihilate them quicker. They're arming indigenous people down there, the Mexican military is, with guns, and they were paying them off and they were feeding them well. But this is a way of counterinsurgency so that they can annihilate the Zapatistas.
One of the things that we've also covered is the involvement of the Army School of the Americas. And I'm wondering, in particular, the SOA's involvement in Guatemala seems to be very similar to what's happening in southern Mexico. The SOA, are they involved in southern Mexico? School of the Americas, La Escuela de Americas? Are they involved in the conflict in southern Mexico, and are they attempting to use the same type of counterinsurgency warfare that they used in Guatemala?
Es eso, ya es evidente, ¿no? La incursión de los paramilitares en Chiapas, en la zona de conflicto, están actuando idénticamente igual que como lo hacían los caiviles en Guatemala. Y los caiviles son parte de toda la guerra de contrainsurgencia que nace a partir de la Escuela de las Américas. Eso es lo mismo.
I think it is very evident that there is presence of the School of the Americas within the situation in Chiapas. The prime example would be the paramilitaries with which the Mexican military is arming, which is similar to another paramilitary that was started within Guatemala.
We're out here today in Austin, Texas, and you're protesting in front of the Mexican consulate. What would you like the people who are listening today to know about what you're trying to accomplish here in the United States?
Lo que nosotros queremos hacer acá, o lo que yo quiero hacer aquí un poco es, toda esta gente es decir alto a la guerra, ¿no? Y decir que sí hay una guerra, ¿no? Que existe, ¿no? Que no es una pelea entre dos fracciones de una comunidad, sino que hay una guerra y lo que estamos pidiendo ahorita es que se detenga esa guerra. Se detenga porque va a morir mucha gente, ya está muriendo mucha gente, solamente por la obstinación de un gobierno, que es el gobierno de Ernesto Zedillo.
Why we are here to protest today, to say stop the war. Stop what's going on in Chiapas. The violence is very evident that something is going down there. And we are here to protest so that we can tell them that people here in the United States are resisting in the way to know that they are not alone. And that we want them here in the United States also to stop the war in Mexico, which is going down in Chiapas.
Sí, no, decirle a la gente en California que haga este tipo de manifestaciones, ¿no? que se levante también y que diga su ya basta y que pueda pedir que la gente que allá pare la guerra, ¿no?
We want the people in California to also do something like this. We want them to go down there and protest and to tell them their own views on what's going on in Chiapas.
Margarita, gracias.
Gracias, muchas gracias a ti.
We're here in the Mexican consulate in Austin, Texas, and the Austin City Police have just shown up as the counselor is explaining to some members of the Zapatista political front and their supporters the position of the Mexican government regarding the continued conflict in Chiapas. My name is Mike Thornton. I'm with KVMR FM Radio from California. How does the Mexican government respond to the complaints of these people who say that indigenous Indians in Chiapas and surrounding areas are being murdered by Mexican military forces using money provided to them by the United States government?
I can answer that.
You can't answer that? Is that because you're not in a position to answer that, or because you don't have an answer to that question? Obviously, these people seem to feel that they have a legitimate complaint.
I can answer that.
Can I get your name for the record?
Yeah, this is Romero.
Romero? And your last name, please.
Romero is my name.
That is your last name.
Yeah, my last name.
Thank you. And you are the counselor here?
No.
And
no,
what is your position?
Deputy counselor.
Deputy counselor, and you can't answer their questions?
No.
Thank you very much, sir.
The government injects the innocent with subliminal criminal vibes with the messages attainable. Station to station, telling lies to a nation addressed by the president. Yo, you should all be aware that the leader will move you. Told your lies to get elected, rejected. A civil rights bill with skill. What is he saying? Subliminal vibes again. You know that.
The jury on welfare reform is in. Most of the nation's poor are worse off than before. A new study by Tufts University's Center on Hunger and Poverty says two-thirds of the 50 states have welfare programs that push the poor further in poverty. Governor Tommy Thompson, from my home state of Wisconsin, is famous as a welfare reformer. In 1996, President Clinton called Thompson's plan one of the boldest yet attempted in America. But our state ranks 30th in the Tufts study. That doesn't fill me with civic pride. Your state may be no better. All over America, there's less money available and it's tougher to get than before. In many states, welfare reform is also squeezing people out of educational programs and into the workforce. The Tufts researchers found that 32 states allow fewer than one-third of the adults in their caseloads to participate in vocational educational training. These states are yanking the ladders out from people. Across the country, people are crowding into homeless shelters and food pantries. The U.S. Conference of Mayors says during 1997, requests for emergency food assistance increased by an average of 16%. Almost 60% of the cities showed an increase in requests for emergency shelter. If the federal government isn't going to repair the damage it did by passing the 1996 welfare reform bill, then the states need to do the work. 12 states have restored food stamps to legal immigrants. The rest need to do so as well. The states need to create jobs that pay a living wage. States should reward people, not punish them, for educating themselves at colleges and universities. Child care and health care should be affordable and accessible. We aren't proving anything by making life hell for our nation's poor. If we really want to help people escape poverty, we've got to invest in programs that will give them a chance. For the Progressive Media Project, I'm Catherine Capilaro.